Hello, it's us, the Green Team, once again falling over ourselves in our enthusiasm for coming into your home and reading the paper to you. So welcome to this latest recording of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynemouth Talking Newspaper. My name is Gwen Wedden, and I'm joined in the studio by the other members of our team, Graham, Lynn, Chris and Mike, and we all hope we find you well and in good spirits. Today is Friday the 12th of April, and spring has truly sprung now. The daffodils have finished, and the tiny young leaves on all the trees look like misty green lace. In fact, all the colours in the countryside look freshly painted and bright. Well, today's fun fact is that on this day in 1606, the Union Jack was adopted as the national flag of Great Britain. Well, who knew? But enough of all this trivia, now let's get started on today's news items.
Hello, this is Chris, and I'm reading the front page of the Tynemouth Post. Volunteers on Tynemouth crew mark 200 years. Volunteers from Tynemouth Royal National Lifeboat Institute mark the charity's 200th anniversary on Thursday by signing a One Crew Pledge. The promise to save everyone we can without judgment is written on the RNLI's bicentenary Connecting Our Communities scroll. The historic document is currently on a six-month relay visiting all the RNLI regions. Tynemouth RNLI is the 32nd station to sign the scroll. The relay began at Westminster Cathedral on March the 4th and will conclude in October when it reaches the Isle of Man, the home of the RNLI founder, Sir William Hillary. Five Tynemouth RNLI volunteers were picked to sign the scroll following a draw. They were Lord Clifford, LMNG patron, Matt Slater, shore crew, Alan Hardwood, water safety officer, Adrian Knowles, fundraising volunteer, and Brian Arnett, lifeboat visits team. The scroll reads, "Whoever we are, wherever we are from, we are one crew ready to save lives. We are powered by passion, talent, and kindness, like generations of selfless lifesavers before us. This is our watch. We lead the way, valuing each other, trusting each other, depending on one another, volunteering to face the storm together, knowing that, with courage, nothing is impossible. That is what has been always driven us to save everyone we can. It's what makes every one of us a lifesaver." This was signed in 2024 by representatives of their RNLI's life-saving communities on behalf of all who strive to save everyone.
Hello, I'm Graham, and my first headline today, very interesting one, namely Quackingham Palace. A new temporary home has been set up for the black swan population in Dawlish, which has been named Quackingham Palace. The structure was erected next to the existing aviary by the town council's waterfowl wardens in case it is needed over the coming weeks as the latest eggs are beginning to hatch. Visitors have been asked to keep their distance from the new brood as they are hatching. One of the eggs, which was laid by the old post office site, has hatched, but it is unclear whether a second egg will now hatch. A waterfowl warden spokesman said the four youngest black swans in the aviary have gone to a temporary home and will return in a few months. The spokesman explained, "The aim is to build increased numbers once the cygnets are grown, so that Dad Bert will not be able to bully a larger number. This is following advice received after a recent visit from the British Waterfowl Association. A temporary aviary structure has been erected on the grass area next to the main aviary in case it is needed due to the two nesting pairs. It will temporarily house swans or cygnets if there are issues with nesting pairs. It may not be needed, but it is a plan B with wardens assessing on a daily basis. We ask everyone to keep their distance from the new cygnets and swans and respect all the waterfowl on the brook.
Hi, Lynn here. My story's title is Mother Runs Parish Marathon in Memory of Her Daughter. A loving mother from Devon whose athlete daughter died young from an undiagnosed heart condition ran the parish half marathon to help avoid unnecessary deaths. The sponsored race supports her bid to change safeguarding protocols and increase access to screening in order to diagnose young sports people for heart conditions early. Hillary's daughter, Clarissa, died last year just short of her 21st birthday in May, despite being highly active and fit as a member of the Tavistock Athlete Club. Her mum, Hillary of Lamerton, finished in 1 hour 40 minutes and raised £10,840 in sponsorship at the Paris Marathon, which she said was a phenomenal amount. I ran in memory of Clarissa and as a tribute to the places I knew she regularly ran while she was on her language year abroad in Paris. It was an emotional run and a pretty painful one physically as I have a hamstring problem. But thanks to the spur of Clarissa and so many of my supporters, I finished. Together with Clarissa's campaign for Cambridge Hearts, we have secured funding for 2 days of screening and are on our way to the 4 days we have planned and which will take place every year until we have secured a more permanent solution, which should mean screening for thousands of the community each and every year. Clarissa's campaign is a campaign to raise funds for these annual screening days run by Cambridge University, this being the university where Clarissa studied. The charity's name is CRY, Cardiac Risk in the Young, and CRY aims to prevent young sudden cardiac deaths through awareness, screening and research, and to also support the affected families. Each screening day, a CRY cardiologist will screen from 100 to 125 students, so maybe 400 to 500 in total, saving up to 2 lives every year. Hillary added, "Right now I know we will have saved at least 1 young life from a totally unsuspected heart condition, and with thousands tested, that number will rise in dozens of lives saved." On a personal note, I am so grateful to friends, family and the total strangers who have so incredibly been generous to me. This is just the start and I couldn't achieve these goals without them. I'm lucky to have had a beautiful daughter with all our laughs, snuggles and shared craziness to hold within my heart. She was a total gift and now she is my shining light. May that light shine for others so that they can avert tragedies like ours. And you can donate to Clarissa's campaign at the website www.gofundme.com/Clarissa's campaign.
And my next item is also a not very happy one. Poignant tributes left after railway death. Dozens of floral tributes and balloons had been left on a bridge by Tynmouth Railway Station in memory of a young man who tragically lost his life just ahead of the Easter weekend. Emergency services were called to the railway line near Tynmouth Station at around 11:50 p.m. on Thursday the 28th of March, following reports of a casualty on the tracks. Sadly, a person was pronounced dead at the scene, a spokesperson from British Transport Police confirmed. The incident is not being treated as suspicious and a file is being prepared for the coroner. The deceased has not yet been officially identified, but has been named locally as a young man called Will. Flowers, balloons and a graffiti message reading Will's Word World have been left on the bridge over the railway line at Shute Hill in Tynmouth in memory of Will. Messages have been left on social media remembering Will as someone who always had a smile on his face and never had a bad word to say about anyone. A GoFundMe page has been set up to raise money from a memorial bench for Will. Donations have already exceeded £5,000, far more than the original £600 target. The Tynmouth railway station death comes less than a year after 58-year-old local gardener Penelope Lane was killed after being hit by a train last September.
Bad weather leads to surge in potholes. Harsh weather conditions mean it's taken just 10 months for more potholes to be recorded across Devon's roads than the whole of last financial year. A total of 40,250 potholes were recorded across the County Council area between April last year and the end of January this year. For the 12 months to March 2023, there were 39,813 such hazards. Data for February has showed another 4,010, pushing the current financial year's total higher still, with figures for March still yet to be confirmed. Devon County Council, which is responsible for the county's roughly 8,000 miles of road, said the early and harsh freeze-thaw cycles experienced during the 2022-23 winter continued to cause problems into the summer. Meg Booth, Devon County Council's Director of Climate Change, Environment and Transport, explained, in addition to the winter weather, there's been an unprecedented number of storm events experienced so far this autumn and winter. She claims the council is speeding up reactive patching, and together with managing their contractors' workloads, that means it is managing to contain the overall number of pothole defects across the network awaiting repair. The work had been helped by £1.5 million of funding from central government. Ms. Booth says the council hopes to use a new system it has trialled for repairing potholes more widely. She said in the summer and autumn of 2023, the service conducted a comprehensive trial of a road surface repair system called Elastomac, which was demonstrated to councillors in May last year. The system uses a flowable mastic asphalt, which incorporates up to 70 to 80% recycled materials and can be installed much more quickly than traditional patching techniques and with less disruption to the travelling public. This new solution will be added to the wider toolkit again from the spring through to autumn this year. The so-called Dragon Patchers, which are repair trucks with a blowtorch-type attachment stretching from the bumper, have been out on more than 500 shifts so far this financial year. And there is a photograph of quite a massive pothole here, both dangerous and damaging to any one of us who dare drive over them.
Exercise Tiger Memorial Unveiling. An Exercise Tiger Memorial cairn was unveiled by MP Anthony Mangel and Dartmouth Mayor Councillor David Wells. The cairn was the brainchild of Teddy Kramer, who has researched the history of the death of the 110 US servicemen in the tragic friendly fire incident that happened on April the 27th, 1944. Sadly, Teddy couldn't be at the unveiling as he had been readmitted to hospital. Exercise Tiger was one of a series of rehearsals for the World War II D-Day invasion of Normandy and took place on Slapton Sands. Communication problems resulted in friendly fire injuries, and an Allied convoy positioning itself for the landing was attacked by E-boats. Slapton was selected for its similarity to Utah Beach, a gravel beach followed by a strip of land and then a lake. Approximately 3,000 local residents in the area were evacuated to enable this to happen. The cairn can be found at Street Gate Car Park. And this article is accompanied by lots of photographs, in fact, 7 photographs, where we can see the mayor and the MP with the plaque, with members of the public, and also what looks like a TV film crew taking photographs of it. There's a beautiful photograph of the landscape around Slapton, and you can see the sea in the distance, and all of the sandy beach around there.
Business raises thousands for cancer charity. A local business in Ashburton is celebrating after raising more than £15,000 for Cancer Research UK. Anne Ran at Tidwell Farm began fundraising for the charity in 2019. Fast forward to today and the business has raised £16,745. Anne Ran have held various events to support Cancer Research UK, including Christmas craft markets, Anne Ran Fest music, Asian Food Festival, and the Newton Abbott Local Committee have collected donations. Owners of Anne Ran, Edwin and Mike, said, "We would like to thank the local residents and communities for their generosity and support at these events. Anne Ran is not only our home, but a place where we hope to share our experiences with others. The local community and our hard-working team have always supported our fundraising activities and are the main reason that we've been so successful in raising this amount of money. So many of us have been affected by this devastating disease, and it's this that keeps us fundraising. More people than ever are surviving their cancer for 10 years or more. Together with its supporters, Cancer Research UK is working towards a world where everybody can live longer, better lives, free from the fear of cancer." The charity's fundraising spokesperson for South Devon, Kim Hamerton, said, "We're fighting over 200 types of cancer, and the unwavering dedication of Anne Ran has helped drive forward research that is unlocking new, kinder, and better ways to beat it."
Illegal immigrants are jailed for drugs factory. 2 illegal immigrants have been jailed after being caught running a massive cannabis factory in Exminster to pay off their debts to people smugglers. 2 Albanians both entered Britain on small boats which crossed the English Channel last year. Within months, they were working at the converted industrial unit in Exminster. They climbed on the roof to try to escape police when it was raided, but were arrested. They are likely to be deported after finishing their sentences. The police found 705 cannabis plants in 5 growing spaces at the unit in Station Road, where both men had been living. It was professionally equipped with high-tech growing equipment, sealed wall, lights, and ventilation. The plants had a potential wholesale value of between £79,000 and £237,000, and the operation was capable of producing several crops a year. A police drug expert estimated the annual value of its output at £1.7 million. Both men, aged 28 and of Station Road, Exminster, admitted production of cannabis and were both jailed for 2 years and 4 months by Judge Stephen Climie at Exeter Crown Court. He said this was not their operation. They entered the UK unlawfully and were looking to repay travelling debts associated with that illegal immigration by carrying out this work. The starting point for the sentence must be raised, because at the time they were in the country illegally. Mr. Stephen Nunn, representing both men, said they're likely to be deported. He said they did not travel together, but have a similar background. They came here hoping for a better time and to earn money to send home to their families. In doing so, they incurred debts for their transport across the English Channel. It is quite clear they knew they had no other option for repayment.
Para-athlete's bid to conquer Antarctica. An elite para-skier and former soldier from Devon is poised to become the first disabled person to ski solo and unsupported to the South Pole. Johnny Huntington, who lives in Kingsbridge, will embark on the expedition to Antarctica in November this year. He will cover 911 kilometres of icy tundra in about 40 days, dragging all of his supplies in a sledge weighing 90 kilos. To give an idea of the scale of the challenge, fewer people have skied solo to the South Pole than have been in space. So that's 51 compared to 650 people. However, no one with a disability has reportedly ever attempted to do what he is doing. Mr. Huntington suffered a devastating stroke in 2014 while working out in the gym, just 8 weeks after commissioning into the British Army. This left him paralysed from the neck down on the left side of his body. After years of rehab, he was able to walk again, although he was left with restricted movement in the whole of his left side. During his recovery, he became a member of the Armed Forces Para Snow Sport Team, which fueled his love of cross-country skiing. Last year, he completed an ultramarathon from Manchester to London in preparation for the upcoming expedition. And on Tuesday, the 9th of April, he completed the final stretch of a grueling 20-day solo training session through Sweden. Speaking exclusively to this paper, he said the blizzard conditions were so fierce at times that he felt like he was inside a ping pong ball. He said, "I feel that I could continue, which is pretty much the point of doing this training. It's been the perfect training ground for me. We've had everything from bright sunshine, howling gales, and what everything you might expect when you're in Antarctica." Explaining the reason for undertaking such a demanding expedition, he said, "It's really important to push yourself, regardless of your circumstances. It's a big personal goal and big personal challenge. It's one of the most challenging things I've ever done, in fact. But at the same time, I can use this to encourage other people to push themselves and try to overcome all of their issues."
Station lift used by homeless man. Engineers are due to attend Dawlish Station following issues with the new lifts. Network Rail says there is a fault with the lifts which needs to be repaired. But there have been numerous sightings of a rough sleeper using the lift overnight. One of the station staff working at Dawlish said he had found the lift in a very dirty state and had made cleaning it a priority. A train passenger has also described being unable to use the station lift because there was a person asleep or passed out across the wet floor alongside some beer bottles. Another reported seeing a man who was described as polite and friendly, who is homeless and regularly rests at the station. Other travellers reported both the app and the lifts themselves were out of order. And a passenger using trains at Dawlish over the weekend said each time they bought tickets online, the app said the lift was out of order. A Network Rail spokesman said, "Engineers will be attending Dawlish Station to examine the lifts and they will be repaired as soon as possible. We are aware of an unrelated report that one of the lifts is currently being used as a shelter and have contacted relevant authorities." The new lift was installed as part of the upgrade to the station, making it accessible for the first time in its history. However, there have been a number of issues which have led to one or both lifts being out of action.
Letters to the Editor from Sean Brogan of Tynmouth. It is a pity that young children cannot vote. Your report last week of 3,788 children in Tynbridge living in poverty brings shame on this government, which has one in six children living in poverty, in the Tynmouth Post on the 4th of April 2024. 1,015 of these children are under school age, and according to Barnardo's, are going to bed in a cold home on an empty stomach. The operation of the two-child benefit policy, where the third child is not supported, reminds me of the Stalinist China one-child policy of trying to control growth in population. This government is at the fag end of its time, and after 14 years of austerity and having sold off rail, gas, water and steel, etc., it appears we have no money even to support our children. There are more billionaires than ever this year. It appears that you don't have to rob banks to be rich. I have no doubt where children would put their eggs, and it would not be for a badly hauled ship, crewed by MPs, who pay themselves £90,000 plus expenses, and still they complain it is not enough.
Illegal tobacco and vapes are seized in raid. £166,000 worth of suspected illegal tobacco and vapes have been seized by Trading Standards in a joint operation with Devon and Cornwall Police. Trading Standards, assisted by the local neighbourhood policing team, located and seized more than 18,000 suspected illegal tobacco products and 2,000 illegal vapes from a rural location in the South Hams. The goods seized included a number of suspected counterfeit products, non-paid duty tobacco products and non-UK compliant vapes. The sale of these items is illegal. Inspector Ben Shardlow, who heads up the neighbourhood policing teams in South Ham, said these illegal goods do not go through regulated safety testings and quality control procedures like the legal products that are sold in the UK. This means we don't know what's in them. Carrying out this proactive warrant shows great partnership working and has resulted in identifying a significant amount of illegal goods. It's very positive we were able to remove such a large amount from the streets and in circulation. I'd like to urge members of the public to report concerns to us so that we can continue to disrupt illegal and criminal activity, just as we have done in the South Hams. Councillor Rufus Gilbert said the removal of these illegal tobacco and vapes from entering the marketplace is a high priority for us, and this was yet another successful operation. The service uses detection dogs during operations, so regardless of where it is hidden, in a storage container or a retail premises, the dogs have the ability to sniff out even small quantities of tobacco that are hidden from view. Retail outlets that sell counterfeit and illicit tobacco are big business, and these shops can undercut other local general stores who are trying to operate legally during difficult economic conditions. Because the tobacco is sold at pocket money prices by criminals who are not interested in asking for proof of age, it encourages children and young people to start smoking. Illegal tobacco products are also present a genuine health risk above and beyond that of legal tobacco, as they aren't subject to the same quality control checks and are often found to contain high levels of contaminants.
And just two obituaries this week. Ken Butt sadly passed away on the 3rd of April, just 6 days before his 90th birthday. A celebration of Ken's life is to be held on Wednesday, the 24th of April, at St Gregory's Parish Church, Dawlish, at 1:30. Russell Neil Martin passed away peacefully at Torbay Hospital on March the 28th, aged 79 years, after a short illness. His funeral service will take place at St James Church, Tynmouth, on Friday, April the 26th, at 10:30. More details available at J.H. Way Funeral Services. And now for upcoming events. On Tuesday, the 16th of April, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Dartmouth. If you wish to go on the trip, the number to ring is 01626 888 890. Wednesday, the 17th of April, Holcombe Garden Society meet in Holcombe Village Hall at 2:30 p.m. and Starcross History Society meet at the Music Room in Powderham Castle. No time given for that one, I'm afraid. Thursday, the 18th of April, Holcombe Residents Association meeting, 7:15 p.m. in the Village Hall. And also on Thursday the 18th, Exminster Local History Society meet in the Methodist Hall at 7:30 p.m. for a talk by John Smith on the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings.
And my next article is Steve's coast-to-coast trip to screen at the Alexandra. A documentary film from a two-time BAFTA award-winning director that features Newton Abbott's Steve Green is to screen at the Town Cinema next month. Scott Cinemas will screen Michael B. Clifford's new film, Chasing the Sun, which features Simply Green estate agent Steve Green, on Saturday, May the 11th. The film, which is all about the power of the bicycle to help save the planet, explores the personal stories of everyday cyclists as they chase the sun. I am incredibly proud to be part of something that means so much to me personally, especially as cycling has been such a positive impact on my life over the last 8 years, Steve says. A long distance sportive, to chase the sun is to cycle from coast to coast, catching the sun as it rises and as it sets. Steve and others took on the challenge in July 2023, cycling more than 200 miles in a single day, from the Thames estuary to Weston-super-Mare. Steve was filmed as he trained for the event and during and after finishing the event. The journey saw him and the crew, which was made up of Glenn Alford, Stuart Simpson, Carl Williams, Claire McKenna, Tracy Elphick, Ian Grant and fellow Newtonian Paul Kelly, travel through South London, bridging the Thames before heading along the Wiggins Olympic time trial route. It was then an English odyssey through country lanes, quaint villages and the Vale of Pusey, before climbing the Mendip Hills and descending through Cheddar Gorge. Also, the film, described as inspiring and very enjoyable by television broadcaster Jeremy Vine, features cyclists from various backgrounds and shows off different types of bikes, from e-bikes to cargo bikes. There are also contributions from broadcaster and ITV's voice of the Tour de France, Ned Bolting, author and blogger Jules Walker, Turner Prize-winning artist Sir Richard Long and a 4 times mountain bike world champion Tracy Moseley. Steve will be at the screening and will be around afterwards for a question and answer session with the film's producer, Exmouth resident Pip Piper. Tickets can be purchased from the Scott Cinemas website.
More Project brings exciting new vision. An exciting new venture that will explore the rich heritage, stories and folklore on Dartmoor has been announced by Villages in Action. In collaboration with storytellers Sarah Hurley and Lisa Schneidau, Chasing Crockern will bring a myriad of events, story walks, live performances, talks and exhibitions to Dartmoor over the next 18 months. Funding for the project is being supported by the National Lottery Heritage Fund and Arts Council England, using money raised by National Lottery players. Mayor George, creative director of Villages in Action, said, "Chasing Crockern aims to connect Dartmoor's communities with their historical roots and folklore, highlighting the enduring legacy of the Moors' tales and reimagining them for modern audiences." Working hand in hand, Villages in Action, Sarah Hurley and Lisa Schneidow will be teaming up with the Dartmoor National Park Authority, the Museum of Dartmoor Life, Moorland Community Care and Skylark FM. The project will also feature contributions from a range of artists, including Lucinda Guy, Paula Crutchlow, Hugh Lupton, Jim Corsley and Ben Tallamy. "I'm delighted to have the opportunity to continue finding out about Dartmoor and its many layers of stories," said Sarah Hurley. "I work with the old folk tales, and along with storyteller Lisa Schneidow, we are interested to hear what the folk today have to say, and to find ways to interpret these stories through a new performance for Dartmoor and its people."
Waterfirm confident that there's no need for a hosepipe ban. South West Water is confident there will be no need for hosepipe bans in either Devon or Cornwall this year, even if there are prolonged periods of hot and dry weather. In 2022, a hosepipe ban was put in place in Cornwall and parts of North Devon after the biggest drought in the region for over 130 years. This was extended to other parts of Devon in 2023. Since then, a combination of record level investments, periods of very heavy rainfall, and customers doing more to save water has seen a real boost in the reservoir levels across the South West, the water company says. Last week, South West Water announced its two biggest strategic reservoirs, Roadford Reservoir in Devon and Colliford Reservoir in Cornwall, have both recharged to more than 90% storage capacity. To help maintain strong water resilience now and in the future, South West Water is investing more than £125 million to increase resources in Devon by 30%. Roadford Reservoir is now at 100% storage compared with 68% this time last year, and while Colliford Reservoir is at 98% compared to 60% last year. David Harris from South West Water's Drought and Resilience Department said, "While it may seem obvious that recent heavy rainfall has led to increased reservoir levels across the region, over one third of the additional storage has come from our own supply interventions and customers reducing their own usage. As a direct result of our investments and interventions, the weather and our customers reducing their use of water, we're very confident that we're in a strong position to navigate whatever the weather we face this year without the need for any water restrictions. This does not mean we will stop our efforts there. We will continue to invest and deliver clean water supplies across our region and prepare as much as we can for climate change and unpredictable weather patterns." South West Water's Water Resources Management Plan is looking 25 years ahead to make sure there is a secure, sufficient and safe supply of water for everyone, while guaranteeing the environment and the wildlife that thrive here. They're not just protected, but also can thrive.
Trotter's Brave Storm. Storm Kathleen's conditions did not deter last weekend's Teambridge Trotters races. Two trotters took on the notoriously difficult 22-mile JP's X to Axe race, named after local running legend John Perrott. The course follows the coast path from Exmouth to Seaton. Although hilly all the way, the section to Sidmouth is relatively runnable before becoming uncompromisingly brutal after Sidmouth. Throw in lots of mud and very strong wind and you have a sizeable challenge on your hands. Ewan Walton had a solid first half, managing to run continuously until beyond Sidmouth, but muscular failure crept in during the second half. Tim Singe said awesome views and spring flowers were on hand to boost morale, as well as supportive marshals. Derek Skinner took part in the ABP Southampton Marathon while fighting off a cold. With a windy day and some very interesting inclines, it made for a just-get-it-done day. Derek persevered and felt drained but enjoyed a great course and great support from the locals. I wish I could have appreciated it more, he said. Gerald Dunn, Victoria Hales and Claire Farrar took part in the power run at Powderham Castle on Saturday. It was an enjoyable run in muddy and breezy conditions. Cheryl finished the 10-mile race. In the 5-miler, Victoria finished and Claire came in at 1 hour and 18 minutes at 154th pace. And there's a photograph of three of the Powderham runners looking very wet and bedraggled, but happy.
England debut for Ben. A talented sportsman from Tynmouth made his England rugby debut in the under-19 Six Nations opening match against France. Ben Cohen played for 25 minutes at fly half and scored a conversion in the game, which took place at Castle Park in Doncaster on the 30th of March. The final result of the match was England 21, France 24. The England under-19 men's side give players the chance to develop their skills and get valuable experience playing at international level. Many players go on to represent their country at senior level. Cohen represents England Chiefs and plays for Exeter University's First 15. A keen sportsman, Cohen also plays cricket. A spokesperson from Sheldon and Tynmouth Cricket Club said, "It's a massive achievement to represent your country, and everyone at the club is very proud of you. It's an amazing step, and we can't wait to follow and support your journey."
Mayor to visit bowling club. Marina Bowling Club on Sandy Lane in Dawlish are gearing up for the green opening at 10 a.m. on Saturday, April the 20th, writes Deborah Ketley. There will be a special guest at the club in the form of the Mayor of Dawlish, Rosie Dawson, visiting to open this green and try her hand at bowling the first bowl of the much-anticipated 2024 season. Bowls for All is our new target, regardless of age, ability or experience. Everyone is welcome here. We're hoping the gods will smile on us and keep the rain away. The maintenance team have been working very hard and the green looks amazing. Our members are really looking forward to going outside in the fresh air and getting stuck into the league games, competitions and friendly matches alike. We're all looking forward to a great 2024 season.
Mental health recovery courses face closure. A service offering free mental health and wellbeing courses across Devon is set to close because of lack of funding. The Devon Recovery Learning Community offers a programme of free courses and drop-in sessions to support people struggling with mental health and wellbeing issues. However, the service, which has been provided by Devon Partnership NHS Trust since 2013, is being wound up in a bid to save money. In many other parts of the country, opportunities like these are not hosted or provided by secondary mental health organisations like ours, but they sit with the voluntary sector and are part of a wider offer of help and support to local communities. This is the direction of travel we are supporting, a Devon Partnership NHS Trust spokesperson said. In due course, this will sadly mean the end of the DRLC offer, he added. We need to move to a position where recovery learning opportunities are delivered through a more financially sustainable model. For many years, we have funded DRLC far in excess of its budget. Given the current financial challenges faced by our organisations and the whole of the NHS in Devon, we are no longer in a position to continue with this level of overfunding, the Trust spokesman added. Last year, the DRLC ran 302 learning recovery courses for more than 3,000 students. These ranged from wellbeing with horses in Newton Abbott and sea swimming in Tynmouth to arts and crafts, walking and music therapy. However, DRLC peer tutor Fleur Barr is angered by the cuts. "I don't want our courses to be another budget cut. Sadly, it's hard to prove the positive impact our courses have had on the lives of our students and the monetary savings we've already made for the NHS because our courses have kept students in a safe place or kept them out of hospital." Devon Partnership NHS Trust says it recognises the value of the DRLC offer. "We know how highly people have valued the work of DRLC over the years, and we would like to express our gratitude to the team and its course tutors for everything they have done to support the mental health and well-being and the needs of local people." Teignbridge has one of the highest suicide rates in Devon, with an average of 15.3 deaths per 100,000 people, compared with a rate of 12.5 deaths per 100,000 people for the whole of Devon.
Tigers are tamed by late strike from Baxter. Jack Baxter was the man to salvage a point for Tynmouth in their 2-2 draw with Axminster Town on Saturday. Baxter squeezed home the equaliser 20 minutes from time in an instantaneous response to the Tigers pushing their noses in front through Lewis Waldy and Jake Quick. After Ryan Tressida scored an early free kick, the Tins looked convincing in their lead right through to half-time. "It was probably a fair result on reflection," admitted Tynmouth boss Liam Jones. "I thought we were superb first half, but we missed a couple of chances and probably should have been more clinical. Then, second half, for 20 minutes we were woeful and found ourselves 2-1 down, not doing the basics right, which is disappointing. Credit to the lads for getting an equaliser and trying to press to see the game out. Based on where we were first half, I'm disappointed with a point. But if we're not going to win, we have to make sure we're not going to lose. And Axminster are a good side. So for us to get a point against them, we can kick on from there. Playing at home, we always want to try, push and win the 3 points. We're relatively good here and we got ourselves into a good position to win the game, but messed it up after that. Tynmouth are now unbeaten in 5 with 2 draws against Axminster and a 2-1 win over champions Ivybridge Town in the past 2 weeks. The Coombe Valley outfit have struggled to put a consistent team together, owing to a squad ravaged by long-term injuries. But there's a very interesting photograph of Ryan Tressida, which I read out earlier, putting the ball into the net with an early free kick.
Firefighters' pub trip for training purposes only. A Moreton Hampstead pub recently played host to several of Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service's very best as colleagues gathered for a training exercise. Firefighters from Bovey Tracy, Shagford, Moreton Hampstead, North Taunton, Okehampton and Princeton descended upon the Bell Inn for an evening of breathing apparatus training. "We would like to thank the owners of the Bell Inn for letting us use such a great venue," a spokesperson for Shagford Fire Station said. The team from Shagford also spent time working with the Mass Decontamination Unit and conducted its annual testing of the horse hose reels. And there's no note of whether they also sampled the pub beers, I'm afraid, but a lovely photo of the whole team outside consulting and looking through all of their equipment.
Equine mare hoofs it to show. Devon's equivalent of equine royalty will be making an appearance at the Devon County Show next month. The mayor of Cockington, or Patrick the Miniature Shetland Pony as he's better known, is champing at the bit to make his debut at the show, and in particular to officiate the grand opening of the Crafts and Horticultural Marquee on the first day of the three-day event, which opens on May the 16th. He will be clad in his bespoke mayoral robes, his custom-made glitter boots and a gold chain, and will munch his way through a ribbon made of carrots at the opening ceremony. Patrick was voted in as mayor by the residents of the South Devon village of Cockington in July 2022. He was bestowed with his official mayoral status in recognition of his tireless commitments to the community, visiting schools, hospitals and care homes as a therapy pony. Patrick just loves to be in the spotlight and is an absolute natural in front of the cameras, explained Kirk, who is Patrick's owner. He's already an international celebrity with his own Facebook page that has 1,500,000 followers. He's also been featured in countless newspapers and magazines and on TV channels across the world. Both Kirk and his wife Hannah are committed to ensuring that Patrick's work schedule is carefully managed. Patrick has helped so many people in so many different ways, and he loves to do it, but we never expect him to perform, only to do what he wants, and always allowing him the space to do it, Kirk added. His latest mission has been visits to schools where children can have a quiet time with him before they sit exams. This seems to really help them to cope with pre-exam nerves. Visitors to the Devon County Show will be able to purchase Patrick's latest blockbuster book, The Adventures of Patrick the Pony. Each copy is signed with Patrick's hoofprint. To find out more about Devon County Show, which runs from May the 16th to 18th at the West Point Showground, visit the website devoncountyshow.co.uk.
Muddy Mutts raise more than £5,000. More than 80 dogs and their owners tackled mud baths and obstacles to raise in excess of £5,000 for animals in distress in an event last month. Hounds and their handlers were soaked in a water dip and covered in mud as they tackled the 3-kilometre Muddy Mutts sponsored dog walk at Powderham Castle, the first time the event has taken place there. Previously, the event had been held at the River Dart Country Park. Everyone who took part completed the course, which consisted of commando crawling and dog-friendly obstacles, such as jumps, tunnels, weaves, and Temptation Alley games. Owners were able to hose their hounds down after the event with dog washing facilities at the end of the course. Claire Mayer, fundraising officer, said, "Everyone had a wonderful time and thoroughly enjoyed themselves. The event has raised an incredible £5,185 for the animals in our care. We would like to thank everyone who took part and their sponsors. A special thank you to our wonderful volunteers, to our wonderful friends at Woofstock UK, and to Powderham Castle for hosting this amazing event. We're already looking forward to next year's event. All the proceeds from the Muddy Challenge will go to help the homeless dogs, cats, rabbits and guinea pigs at the Animals in Distress Rescue Centre in Ipplepen. The charity has been inundated in recent years as a result of this increase in the cost of living and the aftermath of lockdown."
Easter Bunny lends hand at the Ditto Trail launch. A new trail for children was launched over the Easter weekend with a little help from the Easter Bunny. The Dittos of Dawlish Trail is the brainchild of brother and sister team David Hardy and Diane Townsend, and this was launched on Saturday, March the 30th. This year's trail has seen twice as many tiny houses placed in windows and above shop doorways around Dawlish as in previous years. These homes house fictitious creatures called Dittos that are said to be cheerful and hard-working little creatures, though of course no human has ever seen one. Maps of the new extended trail can be collected from Presents Gift Shop, the Hub on the Strand, or can be downloaded from the Dittos of Dawlish website. Elsewhere at the launch party, there was much more Easter fun to be had, with the Town Council's Egg Trail and a bonnet competition proving very popular with the youngsters. And there's some lovely photos to accompany this article. There were 14 entries for the Easter bonnet, and there's a lovely photograph of the children at the launch of the trail sporting their Easter bonnets in the lovely sunshine of the Manor Gardens in Dawlish. And then there's a photograph of the three winning entries, and I spot the Easter Bunny in the background. The winning entry was a beautiful straw hat covered in daffodils. I don't think they're real ones, but with a bright yellow ribbon. And that person won a very large Easter egg as a first prize. We also have a lovely photograph of the mayor, Rosie Dawson, along with the designers of the Ditto houses, and a little house that looks perfect for any kind of up-and-coming fairy who will. Ditto who wants to live there, and the mayor herself is also sporting a nice Easter bonnet, which I don't believe did win a prize because it wouldn't really be fair, would it?
Well, that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. As always, if you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07 376 147 374. Your readers this week were Graham, Chris, Lynn. And our producer is Mike, and the copying and dispatching, it's always a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye from all of us here in the studio.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.